I'm Hannah Young, and you're listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick, sponsored by Philanthropic Impact.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you are in the world, welcome back to The Caring Economy with me, Toby Usnick. Well, as you know, with the show, we try to shine our light on the intersection of compassion, innovation, and commerce, the private sector, and all that comes with it. So today we're going to venture into an increasingly vital world of sustainable investing. With us are two industry luminaries, Kyle or Kyle Lane, but we'll call her Kyle Purcell, and Ben Vivari. They are co-founders of Till Investors. Kyle and Ben have dedicated decades to the investment industry, and their expertise isn't just notable in the world of finance. They've been the force behind the financial content of some of the world's largest asset managers. Now, breaking the convention, they're emerging from the shadows, taking center stage and making their mission to educate everyday investors about the flourishing world of sustainable and ESG investing, or what's also known as environment, social, and governance. They're not just experts, they're educators, with an imminent book release titled Sustainable Investing, an ESG Starter Kit. They aim to demystify the rapidly growing sphere of sustainable mutual funds and ETFs, offering tangible insights on navigating the green investment terrain. So welcome to The Caring Economy, Kyle and Ben.
Thank you so much.
Start by asking each of you to give a 2 or 3 minute digest of your sort of your narrative, where you grew up, how you were raised, how you found your way, maybe some pivots along the way. And to be non-conventional, instead of starting with ladies first, I'll start with the gentleman first. So, Ben?
So, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, went to University of Maryland, and I got my undergrad in marketing. Did a little bit of work in the real world, and then decided to jump back to academia and got my MBA from George Washington University, focusing on strategic management and public policy. And it was there that I first got my sort of, you know, exposure to corporate social responsibility, which eventually would, start morphing into ESG. But at GW was where I really found that what I cared about the most was sort of corporate citizenship. Just making money wasn't the exciting thing. The exciting thing was doing it in a way that was fulfilling and really contributing to society. I guess the other word that I think really came to mind there was accountability. I was seeing a lot of people are making money, but it's not really the right making money, right? They weren't really accountable. They were just sort of extracting money out of society. That accountability thing I really took with me throughout my career. I had a number of stops. I had a stop where I was working with a nonprofit research center looking at colleges and whether you were getting good money, good value for your money in colleges. Mm-hmm. Where is the accountability for those college programs? I then moved on to a job working for a contractor for the Federal Department of Education, looking at, you know, they're spending all this money on data. Well, where's the accountability? Are they getting anything out of it? Right. And so I was, wherever I was always asking the same question, right? Is this really what you say it is? Are you really doing what you say you're doing? What's your real contribution here? Hmm. And so then when I sort of circled back into the world of investing and working with Kyle with our company, Purcell Communications, it was the same thing. Are the clients that we're working with, are they saying what they're doing? Are they doing what they're saying? You know, how can we sort of generate that proof point, and how are we asking the right questions? Mm-hmm. And so when ESG came around, it was like the culmination of all of those things all together. Mm-hmm. And we will, you know, I'm sure I will talk much more about that as we go along here.
When you were that young kid growing up outside of Washington, what were some of the indicators in retrospect that turned you in this direction? Was there a mentor? Was there a teacher? Was there a aha moment ever along the way?
You know what? I've been thinking about this quite a bit, and I think I'm going to give you an answer that's going to surprise you. So when I was in my formative years, in my teens, I was really into music. I'm still very into music. And the music that I was really into at that time was punk music. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really resonated with me in that community was this concept of selling out, was that you could really create this music that's for your community and that really speaks to you and is revealing about you and all the good things about music, or you could sell out, right? And you could just make what you think the radio is going to want, what the record executives are going to do. And boy, did us punk rockers hate those guys that sold out. And I think it's very similar to when you're looking at businesses and are you really running a good and wholesome business and contributing to society and earning your keep and doing all these things? Or are you just selling out here to make a quick buck and screw whatever you came in with? Right. I think there's some synergy there.
I love it. I'm reminded of Freddie Mercury and the biopic a couple years ago where they went with Bohemian Rhapsody, which was something like 10 minutes long, and that would never make it on commercial air, but it did. Right.
So I grew up in Baltimore on the mean streets of Baltimore, and my family really did not have any money to speak of. And so I kind of grew up in an environment where money was just, it was so stressful that it was not part of conversations. My parents never really taught me very much about money. I don't think my parents wanted to know very much about money. It was just, they go to their job and they do what they can with what they take home. And that was kind of as far as they got. The very idea of thinking proactively or with a plan or thinking about what you do with your money was really tough for them. Mm-hmm. You know, for all kinds of reasons that I think a lot of people will recognize, right? So when I went off to college, you know, I got the scholarship and I kind of paid my own way through that college experience. That experience left me really wanting to understand money. You know, because I definitely had a lot of experiences in my young life where it was like, well, you know, do I pay for dinner or do I have toothpaste for the next week? Right. So there were a lot of, you know, experiences where money was a challenge. It was kind of always in my face. Mm. And I wanted to understand it better. I didn't expect to end up in the place where I didn't necessarily plan to become a communications person in the investment sphere. But I did want to understand it. So, you know, I was actually a poli sci major. So, you know, I just kind of like the idea of understanding the world and the way that it works. So I was fortunate after I graduated to my first real job was at Morningstar. And that was kind of like a graduate level education in investments in the world of money. And I learned so much about what money is, how money dictates the outcomes in society, who has the money, what they do with it, the way they think about it. I learned so much about that. And it was a great education and I was very happy to understand it. But I also felt like there was something really missing from mm-hmm. that world, which was a sense of true community purpose and a sense of money, not strictly as a competition over whose spreadsheet has the largest numbers on it. Money is like manure. It's only useful if you spread it around. You know, like the real purpose of capitalism is to put money in the hands of people who can use it productively. And it doesn't always feel to me like that happens. Because I think you can find good productive uses anywhere and everywhere throughout a community and not just, you know, sort of conglomerating it in the hands of a small number of people who are just sort of good at grabbing money, right? So anyway, I've always sort of had those feelings. I've been in investment education for my whole career. Mm-hmm. And I have been working, I've worked with some of the kind of leading lights or some of the early proponents of sustainable investing or socially responsible investing, or, you know, it's had a lot of different names, but mm-hmm. I've had the opportunity to learn a lot about it over time. And in the last 5 years or so, you've seen the market kind of, you know, the interest in this kind of investing really expand. Mm-hmm. And so it's time to kind of get out there with what I know and try to help people mm-hmm. understand it and make use of it, because it really is a valuable tool.
Yeah, well, we appreciate that. We're going to jump in it in greater detail. But first, can you tell me, as a young person, I can relate to what you're sharing to some degree. Financial literacy is so important, and we start late in life so often in teaching it or learning about it. And I wonder if you have gleaned any wisdom that you could share to perhaps some young parents who are listening to this about how important it is to start early with giving your kids an understanding of of finance and, you know, the difference between want and need, as basic as that. Am I putting you on a spot too early?
No. I mean, look, I've got three sons myself who are all like, you know, at the intersection of college and real life, right? And so it's a very prominent issue in our world right now. I think that, you know, there's a lot I could say here, but I think that the real focus is that money is a tool. It's a tool. And if you have, you can do anything with it that you want, but you need to understand that the work that requires to bring money in the door and the benefit that you get from sending money back out the door, those things need to line up. If you can line them up, you can do just fine. You know, you'll be happy whether you're making $10,000 a year or $100,000 a year, right? But you got to line those up and you have to think about it in a clear way, right? The more you can talk about it and think about money, not as like, you know, the harbinger of all good things or the source of all evil, if you can let go of some of those extreme views and just think about money as a tool, it makes it a little bit easier to think more practically about like, what do I need to come in the door in order to feel comfortable with what I can put out the door?
Yeah. And I'm thinking about parents like 5 years old, 6 years old, money becomes an incentive maybe. And that probably stereotypes it in a way that's not always healthy, but it gets the kids' attention.
I was talking with someone else in the industry just yesterday who said that their favorite thing to do, or that they've heard the clients do with young children, is to give them $20 to start with for, like, you know, talking about like a 6 or 7 year old kid, and say, figure out where you want to donate that money. You know, spend a little time on the internet or whatever and find something you want to donate that to. And that gives them kind of a motivation to educate themselves a little bit about what money is and what they can do with it. And as they get older, you can give them a little bit more money or encourage them as they earn their own money to continue that habit. I thought that was kind of a nice idea.
Yeah, you can go from one place to creating a portfolio as well. Start the investment practice.
You certainly can. You certainly can.
So let's talk about Till Investors to kick it off, your company that you've co-founded. Tell us how it came about, what it is, and your mission. And either one of you can jump right in.
Well, I'll jump in to start, and Ben, feel free to jump in as well. But, you know, we started Till a couple of years ago because we, as I mentioned before, Ben and I have a lot of experience working with sustainable investing and the ideas of sustainable investing, as well as sustainable business. Mm-hmm. And what we can see from our angle, from our vantage point, is that if you're a very wealthy investor or you're a very high dollar institution, you have tools aplenty. So you can come to the table and say, you know, we're the largest climate change oriented organization. Hey, investment advisors, we expect our money to be invested in tune with our mission and with our values. Or high net worth families do this all the time. But beneath a certain dollar level, no one even knows that this exists, right? And the companies you would expect to help to provide that information, like asset managers or financial advisors, they don't do that job very well or at all in a lot of cases. And it, you know, we really feel like this is a huge gap, because if you talk to people about what they're interested in doing with their money, the numbers, the data, the studies, and the personal anecdotes that we can tell, people want to do this. They are ready to do this, but they don't understand it. The level of information is just not there for people to feel comfortable or confident in starting down this road. So we just want to fill that gap. And we want to, by filling the gap, we kind of want to spur some of the advisors and the asset managers out there to start talking about this kind of investing a little bit more realistically and a little bit more honestly with their clients.
Yeah, it's a perfect segue to Ben. I'm reminded of the selling out reference for punk rockers. And I think there's a lot of greenwashing, and you know, there's ESG has been the flavor of the month for a while now, but is it truly ESG? So
it's been a heck of a month for that flavor of the month, right? You got to remember that sustainable investing, the idea of it has been around for a long time as really a niche, right? You know, some of the larger and more established sustainable investing companies have been around for 30, 40 years. Certainly things have evolved quite a bit over the last 5 or 10 years. There's plenty of Johnny come latelys. There's plenty of let's slap ESG on this and put it out there. But there's also, you know, a lot of people who are doing this in a real genuine way. And the struggle for everybody from the asset managers to the advisors to the end investors who are looking at this is that the language and the standards are just not there yet. Right. And so you're seeing things mislabeled either disingenuously or just because there's not a better way to do it. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, the world of investing is so used to talking in numbers for good reason, because it's money, it's numbers, what you care about. But sustainability, there's so much qualitative, there's so much words, and we're just not used. This industry is not used to talking about things in that way, because at the end of the day, what matters is you got X point, X percent in your investment, and your methodology is sort of secondary to that. But when you're talking about sustainability, your methodology is not only, you know, not secondary, it's often primary, right? I want to know what it is that you are doing with my money and how is this reflecting my values, right? And so because everything is still evolving to the extent that it is, it's just, it can be frustrating. But what we're trying to say with Till is, yeah, it's going to be frustrating a little bit, but if you get under the hood, spend a little bit of time, you don't need to do a dissertation on it, right? Spend a little bit of time and get the basics. You can still find an investment that speaks to you and speaks to your values and is genuinely trying to make the world a better place.
So can you give us an example of maybe how a client or a person, a company would approach you and how you would add value or help them out at Till Investors to be more impactful, more successful in both financial and impact ways?
It depends on the type of company that's coming out to us. But if you're, for example, an asset manager, you know, we're going to want to help you talk about, yes, it is not only safe to talk about your methodology, you know, traditionally asset managers, that's our proprietary information. Right. Don't ask, don't tell, we're not going to tell you. But here, that's your selling point, right? So we're going to help you talk about what your methodology is. You don't just get to say sustainable. Tell me what sustainable means to you. And mm-hmm. even beyond that, you know, what we tell individual investors when you're looking at these companies or looking at these funds is, look for those examples. Are they telling you, here's why we are invested in company X, here's why we sold our shares in company Y, and do those reasons line up with what you're saying about how you view sustainability? Mm-hmm. If they do, wonderful. And you can tell that this fund is being genuine and communicating with you about what they mean. And if they don't, uh-oh, there might be some greenwashing here going on, whether it's on purpose or just because they haven't gotten their methodology straight yet.
Right. So, Kyle, a follow-on to that is, what sorts of trends, for lack of a better word, are you seeing? For example, my sense is that the E and ESG had been sort of tapering off a little bit as the S was rising up in a lot of social justice actions in the past few years. And that governance is still needs, particularly globally, we need more emphasis on governance. But is it all just a bubbling pool of E's and S's and G's, or what's going on?
Yeah, that's actually a really great question. And, you know, we use the ESG terminology because it is pretty common, but, you know, it does sort of feel like a bubbling cauldron of letters sometimes. But you are absolutely right that in the wake of the pandemic and in the wake of the George Floyd incident, like there was a lot more focus on the S, and that was concurrent with some real strong performance for a lot of sustainable style investments, mm-hmm. right? So because of that, I think there was a fair amount of focus on the S part of environmental, social, and governance. Governance, I don't think people really know very well what that means, even though personally, we just published a blog post on this about, governance really is at the heart of what makes a company sustainable. But leaving that aside, that's not necessarily what motivates an individual to invest in this manner. The studies show that people who want to invest sustainably are most motivated right now by environmental issues. That's the bottom line there. And I think that's because everyone is experiencing the
impacts,
climate change impacts in their own lives, in their own environments. And there's been so much conversation about that world for a really long time. And I think also because large companies are feeling very comfortable talking about it. So when you have Microsoft out there putting out a big report every year on their environmental footprint and what actions that they're taking, I mean, that kind of frees the business world to sort of follow suit, if you understand what I mean. So I do think there's continues to be a lot of focus there. I think another trend I might point out that I think is in the background, but could be important, is that there is a lot of regulation happening right now. So in Europe, they've put out new standards regarding what qualifies as a sustainable and or an ESG investment. And the SEC is going through that process right now and is expected to be releasing some rules along those lines in the near future. Those rules aren't expected to be quite as tight as what they're doing in Europe, but they are in a similar boat. And they're not going to magically transform anything overnight. But it goes to what we were saying earlier, that there's a lot of great sustainability data, but there are very few sustainability standards. So it's very hard to say this company is good because its sustainability rating is above the baseline. There is no baseline. It's just a lot of different relative measures. So this is necessary to get us down the road of having standards that will make it easier for people to make choices with their investments.
Ladies and gentlemen, again today on The Caring Economy, we're really excited to have as our guests the dynamic duo of Kyle Purcell and Ben Vivari. They are the co-founders of Till Investors, and we're talking about ESG investments, sustainable investing. I know you've got a book coming out, which we're going to talk about. I wonder about your tips, your sort of toolkit, sustainable investing and ESG starter kit. What's going to be in the book that we could look for or that you can share now in terms of the basics or the tips that you would typically be citing?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing that was really important to us about this book is that because so much language around investing and finance is so convoluted and technical and jargony, we really put a lot of effort into trying to make it be as understandable and relatable as possible. We put a lot of examples in the book. We tried to be as clear as we could about all the different myths and the concepts and the confusion that can exist. So that's an important thing for me to say, because we certainly did put a lot of effort into that. But I think, for example, when you talk about different approaches to sustainable investing, the industry tends to offer three types of strategies. There's an ESG integration strategy, there's exclusionary strategy, and there's an engagement strategy. And I don't think anyone outside of the investment industry has a clue what any of those words mean.
I don't.
So, why would you? But that's the language that they use because it makes sense to them, right? Isn't that wonderful for them? So what we tried to do is turn that into language that is much more relevant for people. We talk about fighting styles. So, it's like if there's a business down the street that's selling alcohol to minors and you don't like that, what's your reaction to that? Like, how do you want to fight for things to be better? Are you more like, I'm gonna stay away from that business, they're terrible? Or you're like, I want to do some more research to find out who's doing things the right way. Or are you going to march right in there and talk to the owner and say, I really don't like what you're doing, right? any of those responses is fine, but it tells you a lot about what you're comfortable with in terms of sort of fighting for change. And you can directly translate those fighting styles into those kinds of strategies that, that you try to invest with. And then we can give you some of the keywords to look for to say, okay, if this is your fighting style, this is what you're looking for.
Can you give some examples of the myths that you're busting regularly and in the book that we're going to be seeing later this fall?
Oh, I mean, so the biggest myth is that it's a loser, right? That ESG investing is throwing your money away. And the reality is that, well, so the first thing I like to say is there's tons of caveats right now because ESG investing is evolving so much. The data is so young, it's very dangerous to make any sort of blanket statements, positive or negative, about ESG. But if you are looking at some of the longer running funds, what you find is they are often returning as well or better than traditional funds. And the longer your time horizon, the better they tend to do. And that makes a lot of sense, right? Because sustainable investing, ESG investing, is about looking at long-term big picture risks and investing in companies that do a good job of managing those long-term big picture risks. Does that mean that sometimes fossil fuels are going to do really well like they did in the wake of the Russia-Ukraine war and maybe you might underperform if you're not holding them? Yes, but this is not a game for day traders. This is for long-term investors. And I like to think that almost all of us are long-term investors, whether we're saving for retirement or whatever it is, right? It, the responsible way to invest is for the long-term. And so if you are investing for those longer time horizons, in general, it looks like these funds have done well, as well, if not better than traditional ones. So that's the big myth.
Great. And I'm going to go back to Kyle's $20 challenge for her kids. If you had, say, $20,000 as an investor, and you had to pick one sort of reliable stock or opportunity to put in your portfolio, do you have one that you, I don't want you to have to, you know, say anything that's not appropriate or comfortable, but is there one that's just, you know, it's like, it's such a bedrock of this space that it wouldn't hurt anyone to have it?
We're not out here selling, right? We're not, we're an independent company. We're not trying to necessarily, we don't want to get ourselves into legal trouble either. So it's probably not wise to talk about a particular investment. We can tell you that we've gone through and looked at all of the main companies, the largest fund companies, and as well as the specialty fund companies that really focus on sustainable investing. And within the book, we've put like profiles of each of them. And we try to talk about, okay, this, so a company like Parnassus, Parnassus is a sustainable focused or sustainable only type of fund company. And they offer a pretty, you know, a pretty successful long-term equity fund, right? So is that the right fund for you? Well, you can look at the profile in like two or three paragraphs, get a feel for, oh, wait, I understand what their strategy is. This is a good setup for me. So that's definitely a good starting point. I will say that, you know, you, the most important thing in my mind is don't feel like you have to do something really amazing or cool with your very first investment. Honest to goodness, if you are in a retirement fund and it's managed by Vanguard, and there might be one investment in there that's sort of an ESG index, is a Vanguard ESG index fund the most impressive ESG strategy? Probably not. But is it a valuable step toward becoming a sustainable investor? Absolutely. And it's a very accessible step too. And just taking that step allows you to learn a lot that you can then apply with investments you do in the future.
Great advice. Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, darn it, Kylie, you took what I was going to say, right? But it's true that, you know, in the perfect world, you would look at these hundreds of funds and you would filter and filter and filter and dope, there's the one for me, right? But the challenge is that, one, there isn't a filter and filter and filter tool out there for you. And two, if we're being honest, moving money around is a pain in the butt. It just is, right? If you want to move from one platform to another platform, or you want to invest in this one thing, it takes more steps than you would think that it should. And in this world of I want to click and be done, you're not, it's not that simple, right? So making it easier for yourself, doing with, as Kyle says, look at your current providers, see what their options are. If there's one that's better than the generic fund you're in today, and you do your looking and it looks like they're not greenwashing and you believe in it and it feels good, great. And then if you want to do that deeper dive, if you say, you know what, this is something that's really meaningful to me, mm-hmm. I'm not happy with that first step, well, then we can go into that bigger discussion. You know, my ha-ha suggestion is buy our book, but ha-ha, I think you should buy our book, right? And we'll, you know, and we'll talk you through some of those different fund providers, and we'll talk you through how you can sort of find these different things. You know, for me personally, I prefer investing with the specialty providers. And the reason that I prefer investing with them is that they will vote. They'll do proxy votes, right, at these companies using my money, because that's my money that they're voting with a little bit more of an eye towards that accountability that I like, yeah. Right? They're going to go in and they're going to say, no, if your board isn't, you know, really diverse, we're going to vote against these board members. If there's a proxy vote about whether or not we should disclose our emissions, we're going to say that, yes, you should disclose your emissions. So because that's what's important for me, that sort of, you know, accountability bit, I go to the specialty providers.
Yeah. So it's all the more reason, as you said earlier, you know, we all want to think and aim for the long view. You know, mm-hmm. you could do impulsive trading and moving of money. That would be basically the day traders, right?
Right.
For them, but I don't think the kind of philosophy and effort or goals that we're talking about are consistent with that. So one last question for each of you, the same question, which is our classic closer here, which is pearls of wisdom you've gleaned in your career, purpose-driven lives, purpose-driven careers. What advice do you give to those who might want to be you when they grow up or want to learn from you?
Oh, I'll let Kyle go first, and possibly only.
Well, I would say the values matter. I would say that your values matter. And it's something that I think is, when you spend your career in the financial industry, like sometimes you have to remind yourself of that, because so much of the advice that you get in the financial space, and I think in the corporate space in general, is you need to set aside your values, because all that matters is growth or money or attainment or what have you. I'm a business owner, so I know you have to be able to successfully have income so that you could pay people. You have to be attentive to money and what money does and what money is. And I know that Ben knows that as well. But at the end of the day, your values are more important than any of that. And if you sacrifice your values for any kind of short-term financial or reputational gain, you will pay for that in the long run. I've seen it. I'm old enough now to have seen that pretty consistently. So your values matter. Hang on to them.
I often use the expression reputational currency, because it goes down or goes up. You can't change it once you damage it.
So, yeah.
Ben, pearls of wisdom.
So I teach, because we were talking a little bit before we started here, I'm teaching an MBA course at my local college, and it's about organizational leadership. And I was talking with some of the students about this study that said that people prefer or would be more likely to go work at a company if they had good diversity practices. And, you know, this is an MBA class where there's some mid-career people and some younger people, and all the mid-career people are like, oh, yes, I would like to work at the company. Da, da, da. And all the younger ones, not all the younger ones, one of the younger ones was like, are you kidding me? I can't worry about that. I just got to find a job, man. Like, I just got to get a job. I don't care about your diversity practices. I got to get into the workforce. And I was like, yeah, you know what? There's a point to that. But that's not the point. The point is that when you do get a job at like the company that you would like to want to work for, be kind, have good moral standards, be accountable, encourage diversity, right? This isn't telling you what you need to find. It's telling you what you should be, which is true to yourself, accountable to yourself. Don't freaking sell out, man, right? Let's, you know, hold on to those values wherever you may be, because that defines who you are as a person. Right. And throughout my career, what matters to me is, being accountable and earning your keep and being, helpful to others and being encouraging of others or your employees and your mm-hmm. your colleagues. And those things fit into any organization.
I know you made you somewhat jokingly said earlier about your book, but seriously, how do our audience members follow up with you if they want to know more about Till Investors or when and where to get the book?
So, we're at Till, we're really aligned with the little guys, right? So for us, the place where you can go to find our book is Amazon.
You didn't sell out.
Yes, no, not at all. But no, you can go to Amazon. It'll be in Barnes and Noble. You can also go to our tillinvestors.com website, where we got lots of little fun tools and things that you can do to sort of find your path as a sustainable investor. Maybe learn a thing or two, and find your niche in the world of investing.
Thank you. One thing I would like to throw out there as an ask for your audience is I've been trying to talk with a lot of investors just about their first sustainable investment story. Mm-hmm. What motivated you to do it? How did you do it? Well, how did you feel about it? Not for any purpose other than to sort of gather in one place some, kind of testimonials from people mm-hmm. about what their experience is, to help motivate others as well. So I've got a few of those on the website, and you can always go to hello@tillinvestors.com and just let us know what your thoughts are.
Terrific. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, a round of applause. I want to thank our guests today, Kyle Purcell and Ben Vivari. They are the co-founders of Till Investors, a great ESG/sustainability-oriented investment firm. I hope you'll come back. We'll definitely have a little celebration of your book once it's out in, I guess, November 1st. Is that right?
That's right.
Terrific. Well, all the best to both of you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Toby.
Thank you for listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick. Please share your comments and questions with Toby via Twitter @TUsnick or LinkedIn @TobyUsnick. And thank you for sharing The Caring Economy with your friends and colleagues.